Hello, my friends. Welcome to another episode of this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. So we are getting into some serious data center details this week. So let's start off with a little news you may have missed, okay? Data center edition, perhaps? Let's rewind our fish fry clocks back to just over 2 years ago, July 29th, 2016, to be exact. In that episode of Fish Fry, I reported on a new program at Google that used their DeepMind AI to help their data center cooling equipment function more effectively and efficiently. And with the use of this first-of-its-kind AI-powered recommendation system, Google was able to improve the energy efficiency of its data centers by almost 40%. Okay, so this is how the system was first implemented. The first step was to install a system of neural networks trained on different operating scenarios and parameters within their data centers. They accomplished this by taking the historical data that had already been collected by thousands of sensors within the data center. Data such as temperature, power, pump speed, set points, and they used that data to train a collection of deep neural networks. So, most importantly for this cooling business is that Google trained these neural networks to understand future PUE, or power usage effectiveness, which is, if you didn't know, the ratio of the total building energy usage to the IT energy usage. Okay, so they also trained two additional collections of these deep neural networks to predict future temperature and pressure of the data center over the next hour. Now, the purpose of these predictions was to simulate the recommended actions from the PUE model to ensure that they didn't go beyond any operating constraints. Okay, so fast forward 2 years. This recommendation system is no longer. Yep, DeepMind has taken over. Instead of a human-implemented recommendations, Google's AI system is now directly controlling its data center cooling, but of course, still remains under the supervision of Google's data center operators. Okay, so how does this new first-of-its-kind cloud-based control system work? So Google's cloud-based AI pulls in a snapshot of sorts of its data center cooling system, a system made up of thousands of different sensors, every 5 minutes. That snapshot of information is then fed into DeepMind, and then DeepMind predicts how different combinations of potential actions will affect future energy consumption. And then from there, this AI system identifies which actions will safely minimize energy consumption. These actions are then sent back to the data center and implemented accordingly. And even better, apparently Google's AI system is finding even more ways to manage cooling that even surprised some of the data center operators. Dan Fuenfinger, one of Google's data center operators, put it quite succinctly. He said, "It was amazing to see the AI learn to take advantage of winter conditions and produce colder than normal water, which reduces the energy required for cooling within the data center. Rules don't get better over time, but AI does." Well put, Dan. So as you can imagine, Google isn't stopping at data centers. This kind of AI-driven, cloud-based cooling system could be used in a wide variety of industrial applications, giving way to a whole new way to cool our jets. Or something like that. If you want more information about how Google is using AI to cool its data centers, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. All right, it's time for our first guest, Zadomir Bandic from Western Digital. We're talking about big data, Risk Five, and more. Let's go. My guest today is Zadomir Bandic from Western Digital. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, great to talk to you.
Okay, so first off, for my audience who may not know, what is Western Digital all about?
Western Digital is all about the data. We are a premier data company with a presence in both data center and enterprise, as well as in consumer data businesses. We are a company that recently integrated AGST, which was a premier enterprise storage company, as well as SanDisk, which owns Flash and is a premier consumer flash company. Western Digital offers a very broad portfolio of products and solutions for storing, preserving, and taking advantage of data.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about what you guys are showing at the RISC-V Pavilion this year.
Cool. So we are actually co-founder of RISC-V through our AGST legacy company, yeah? And I'm on a board of directors of RISC-V. We have recently announced last year on a 7th RISC-V workshop our commitment to ship a billion RISC-V cores in our internal SoCs, in our internal silicon. So we're quite interested in RISC-V from multiple angles. Our interest started in the data center, looking for open source RISC-V architectures and open interfaces for memory devices and for accelerator devices for machine learning and inference workloads. Here today on DAC, we are showing Dr. Filip Blagojevic showing a demo of a neural network implemented on a RISC-V Hi-Fi board from Sci-Five doing the de-blurring of the images. So if you want to take a look at the demo, if you have a video camera or photo from a very large distance that has a lot of noise or was recorded in a poor optical or poor lighting conditions, the neural network that has database of images is actually doing kind of the refocusing of the image.
So let's talk about the future of RISC-V. And now, since you're on the board and you're one of the co-founders, what do you feel is the momentum for the future of RISC-V?
There's a crazy momentum in RISC-V. We started, literally with four or five companies 5 years ago. We have over 150 member companies right now. We have over at least five announcements of actually commercial deployment of RISC-V-based solutions. And we have enormous activity in our internal technical committees, enormous activity in the open source Linux community, indicating many, many more projects coming to light within the next 24 to 36 months. We have successfully conquered the world of academic CPU projects. There's virtually no university group left that's doing something different than RISC-V when it comes to the IoT processor innovations, machine learning accelerators, almost every possible RTL project in academia worldwide, from US to China, through India and Australia, everybody's actually doing RISC-V. We have also successfully conquered a Silicon Valley and Shanghai startup companies starting projects that are related to compute cores. For any startup today, starting a new SoC, this is actually a very practical thing because startups can share among themselves the software running on RISC-V, which is in everybody's common interest, and keep their proprietary IP proprietary, which is something that's very native to their own projects, to the IP that they're trying to create. So we see this tremendous penetration of RISC-V into startups. Where we are headed is we expect that a lot of new projects, especially projects motivated by the new workloads related to artificial intelligence, will be geared in RISC-V direction.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining
me. Thank you very much, Amelia.
Speaking of RISC-V, next up, let's bring in Alexander Redkin from Syntacor to chat about open source SDKs, custom RISC-V processor IP, and more. Thank you so much for joining me, Alexander.
Thank you for having me.
So first off, for my audience who may not know, what is Syntacor all about?
So we are IP company. We develop and license state-of-the-art CPU IP compatible with RISC-V. And this is one part of our story. Another part of our story is we can deliver highly optimized derivative IP based on our basic product line. And we do that by taking customer workloads and analyzing it using our internal technology.
Okay, so tell me more about your customizable processor IP family.
So the approach is not new. It's known and it's used by quite a few companies already. It's based on something which is called instruction set processor. But what is interesting about RISC-V is what for the first time power of that technology can be brought to the main sockets of the system. It used to sit somewhere in the periphery, and a lot of high-quality peripheral IP is based on ASIP approach, either in wireless communications or in some cognitive-related IP. Now, RISC-V brings that power into the main sockets of the system.
Now, one thing I was really interested in is in your SCR1 SDK. So tell me about this SDK.
It's really similar to all the other SDKs which we provide, but what makes it interesting probably is what SCR1 core itself is open source. So we did it for multiple reasons. First, to enable better footprint of the entire ecosystem, and then we have university program, which was also really handy sort of to base on the product quality design. Yeah, regarding SDK, same as with our other IP, it's built around standard low-cost FPGA system, FPGA SDKs from different vendors. We support Altera, Intel, and Xilinx currently, and it allows people to easily experiment, get feeling of how things are.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Alex.
Yep, thank you very much.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos. And you can subscribe to our EEJournal YouTube channel as well. I'm just saying. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, I love that stuff, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of August 24th, 2018, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.